when the dust settled, they had Austin as a babyface, Rock as a babyface. Austin wins the Rumble, Rock wins the title, and they decide to go with the babyface Rock versus babyface Austin main event here. Now, there's no denying they were the two biggest names, and I'm always the kind of person that thinks the two biggest guys in the promotion should be in the main event.
Yeah, I guess there's nothing to argue with that.
But I didn't like, I thought actually it should have been a heel, and it would have been interesting because the crowd reaction. It should have been a heel, even though that probably would have helped them moving forward. It should have been a heel Austin defending against the Rock. I remember I wasn't alone. There were a lot of people talking about this that, you know, it should be heel Austin putting over the Rock here at WrestleMania. Rock got hosed again, I thought.
Yeah.
Now, logistically, there was the issue that the Rock, old Hollywood came a-calling.
Right.
And he leaves.
But the Rock was going to be back before SummerSlam. So what you could have done, Rock wins at WrestleMania, quickly drops it, goes films, and then comes back.
Yeah, and again, this is we're getting way off the beaten path. We're not even talking about WrestleMania. We're talking about fantasy booking here. I remember really thinking that he should have dropped it to a heel-turned Chris Jericho in 2001. And Jericho could have been the mole turncoat of WWE for the WCW invasion.
Right.
Because, you know, he had ties to it. He came in as this outsider. But whatever. Right. We're way off the track.
We're talking about one of the most consequential things here because the Austin heel turn was part of the beginning of the end of the boom, and that's part of our analysis. Now, there are two things that I see here that we haven't discussed yet. One is, in talking about the setup for WrestleMania 17, we've gotten into the first piece and one of the strongest pieces that we have that there could possibly be of commonality to today, that being the start of Stephanie McMahon taking over the booking and the promotion. We started to see it in 2000. She's been head of creative since
then.
Her
first pay-per-view was Survivor Series 2000, which, by the way, was the first poorly received pay-per-view of 2000, just so you know.
Yeah.
With you know, Austin dropping Triple H from a crane.
Exactly. So there was that. That's one point. Another one is, and again, and some might say that this verges into fantasy booking, but I want to point out here how I think they botched this. There are two parts of Austin's turn. One is,
by the way, this WrestleMania did do huge business. We're not disputing that.
It did. But we're talking about how it killed what came afterwards.
Yes.
The number one reason I saw at the time from reading the dirt sheets, Austin and them saw about, Hulk Hogan was energized when he became Hollywood Hogan. We'll try and do the same. The problem is Hulk Hogan had gone through how many years? A minimum of three or four of being a pretty lukewarm face.
Oh, and was being regularly. Probably early Nitros, kids.
Yes.
Okay? Hulk Hogan makes it seem like him and Eric Bischoff woke up one day and said, you know, let's do this. I've got this unbelievable idea. And granted, it was big at the time. We shouldn't underscore it. It was huge. I mean, there's been no better heel turn in the history of the business. But let's, you know, Hulk Hogan is a heel's never been done. Let's do that. The reason it works so well is because again, I think I
mentioned
this before.
They were begging to boo him.
A crowd that grew up on the Four Horsemen,
yep.
Dusty Rhodes, Magnum T.A., the Road Warriors, that base audience of WCW didn't want Hulk Hogan. They didn't want the Hulk Hogan shtick coming in.
Right.
And he was regularly booed for the first year of Nitro. So it worked. With Austin, there was no booing.
He was a red-hot face.
Yeah, I mean, people kind of maybe like you or an eye ilk on the internet were kind of sick of his. You know, they were like, oh, you know, there was some of that where you had the feeling he had been to the mountaintop and you'd seen the peak of Steve Austin for many reasons. One is it's always better the first time when he wins it, when something's new. Injuries had begun to take their toll, quite obviously. But the build was another thing, too, that needs to be mentioned.
Yeah.
I hated how he lost to Triple H going into the show.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing, and now you're leading into my next point.
I hated that.
Brilliantly. Here's the thing, though, but that could have played into the heel turn because what they wouldn't do with this heel turn, in order to assuage Austin's ego in terms of protecting himself politically, which I know that he knew that he had to do, but also his merchandising. I'll get to the merchandising in a second here, but if he's going to turn heel, okay, there needs to be a rationale for it, and here's the rationale. I'm afraid I came back as a shell of myself. I came back, and I'm afraid I'm not what I used to be. And you could see hints of it. They were trying to hint that Austin had some insecurity, but that needed to be stronger. But Austin wouldn't make himself weak enough, plus Austin wouldn't get away from wearing the gear every week. Whatever happened to the Vince McMahon that wanted him to be a corporate champion? And he's still out there wearing the Fox Fear shirts every week and everything like that. They didn't change his character enough to make him a heel. And they needed to give him more insecurity. It needed to be, I'm afraid, I'm not what I was.
Kind of, they kind of did like he's paranoid, everyone's after him, but it wasn't.
It needed to be stronger, Kyle.
Look, here's the thing. And moving forward and looking past this, we'll hit WrestleMania in particular.
Yeah.
He did a good job as a heel, but I don't care. It was not the correct move.
Right.
It was not, the business-wise shows, it was not the correct move at all. And here's the other thing we need to talk about with WrestleMania. There's so many setup points with this. The purchase of WCW also comes into play here, where they had made up in their mind beforehand that Steve Austin was going to turn heel and win the title at WrestleMania.
Yep.
They then have WCW fall into their lap. And logistically, they wanted to mesh. I guess they wanted to mesh those two storylines. And to me, I always thought they got a mulligan, that the WCW invasion was their mulligan to get out of the Austin heel turn, which did not work.
Right.
Instead, they married the two storylines and made both even worse.
Yeah.
I think. Now, he did an exemplary job in the role. I mean, if you're just evaluating him, he was very good. The matches were good. He got great reactions. He even got some heel. He did get heel reactions, but it just wasn't the right move. People did not want to necessarily boo Steve Austin. Here's the other thing too, and maybe this will be the impetus to get to the card in particular.
Yeah.
That live crowd in Houston definitely didn't want to boo Steve Austin.
Right.
That was the worst part about it. Is they tried turning him heel on a night where the crowd overwhelmingly supported him over another babyface.
Yep. Yep, and as we'll talk about for the next year, a bad crowd can totally ruin whatever you're trying to do at a given point in time.
Well, yes, I will hit that. But here's the thing, and we'll hit the particulars here, because we'll start being positive for a little bit.
Okay. Because it was a great card. I mean, second greatest ever in your estimation.
Yeah, a lot of people think it's the best. Most people think it's the best. It's very ironic, given my penchant for things. Like, you know, my opinion of Hogan Andre, which was much maligned by some others. Okay, that misunderstood some things I said. Okay, okay, people who, in my opinion, quite frankly, were just looking to, you know, take words out of context. People that were doing their best Skip Bayless impression. Okay. But given my opinion of Hogan Andre and Austin Rock is the far superior wrestling match. But WrestleMania 17, if I was to categorize this show in one synopsis, I would say this. Have you ever seen a great movie, Ricky? I'm sure you have. That has a lot of great actors, big star, big name actors. It's phenomenal throughout. Gives you exactly what you're looking for. Then the ending just absolutely sucks.
Yeah.
WrestleMania 17 is the wrestling equivalent of that movie. This is the first 95% of this show is outstanding. The last 5% is an unequivocal disaster.
So this is the disclosure of pay-per-views.
yes. It is an we'll talk. Let's just hit it first. Because these show, the undercards are so weird. But here's with Austin Rock. It is, first of all, somebody was obviously watching a lot of All Japan going into this. Because
wonderful match. I mean, just all kinds of things.
Here's the thing.
Austin busts out the million-dollar dream as a hint on the heel
turn. Kicking out of all each other's finishers.
Yep.
The crowd heat was off the page here. Rock, this was the first time, too. Talk about foreshadowing. This was the first time The Rock as a babyface began to get booed.
Yep.
Because, granted it was in Texas, but this was a pro Austin crowd that wanted to see Austin win as a babyface.
Right.
Not that was another major problem. This match is wonderful. This part of me thinks I have this match kind of underrated. I have this as the 13th or 14th best match in WrestleMania history.
Oh, this has got to be at least fringe top 5 to me. Yeah, the ending sucks, but how much are you going to penalize it for the ending?
A lot. I think you have to penalize it a lot.
All right.
If let's take Hogan Andre,
all right.
A far inferior wrestling match.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about this in the WrestleMania 3 podcast.
This loses nothing for atmospherics up against Hogan Andre.
No, but ending-wise, if you were to take Hogan Andre and do a similar ending, it would have been Hogan turning heel and aligning with Bobby Heenan, revealing it was all a ruse to make Andre the Giant look stupid.
Right.
It's awful. It is a beyond awful ending. And it just goes to show, I talked about how in the early WrestleManias, great booking, proper booking can negate subpar to average wrestling. The first eight WrestleManias, I think we agreed, were all properly booked. I mean, there's maybe a thing here, two there, you see, but largely it would not have affected the bottom line.
Right.
Starting with this WrestleMania, you saw how bad booking can really negate great wrestling. Because I know people like you and I love the star ratings, love the snowflakes, love the great matches. By and large, it doesn't sell tickets.
Right.
People want to see stars. And if you look at the drop-off in viewership and buys from this show, and granted, there's going to be a natural decline, obviously, from WrestleMania to Backlash every year, it was horrid what happened in the month that followed. From this to the main, when Triple H and Austin is the two-man power trip against Undertaker and Kane, it was one of the most pronounced drop-offs in the history of this company. They had the chance to get out of it with the invasion. They blew it there. I'll say this. I should probably reevaluate. I think I've got that too low, this Austin Rock. That to me almost is like the definition of like a 4 3/4 star match.
Absolutely.
Don't
that's
you think?
That's where I'd slot it, yeah. Yeah, and
did I screw this thing?
I'd give it 5 easy if the ending made more sense. This might, I'll tell you what, if the ending made more sense, this could have been neck and neck. As sacrilegious as this is to say, this could have been neck and neck with Austin Hart if the ending made more sense. Because the action was so great.
I screwed Triple H. I think I did. You know, this match is a 4 3/4 star.
It is. It is. I mean, I think you.
I don't think it's as good as Savage Steamboat. By the way,
you were talking about an opinion. Something. Okay. Well,
you talk about people that. It is. All right. Here's the thing. There are 4 matches in WrestleMania history that I've given 5 stars to. Okay. We've already covered them all.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 of them are from WrestleMania 10.
Yeah.
Savage Steamboat from 3 and Hart Austin from 13.
Yeah.
After those 4, there is a grouping of about 10 matches.
Mm.
Some we talked about, a few that we actually haven't.
Okay.
That are probably, you know, if you got me in the right mood, I would advocate one over the other. Another one is on this show, by the way, the TLC match. But there's those two. Other matches we've talked about, I would put Warrior Savage in that group, Flair Savage in that group, Hart Michaels, the Iron Man, in that group.
Okay.
I'm scanning, and that's all we've talked about so far.
Okay.
But there's a group of about 10 matches where it's like for the 4.5s to 4 3/4 range match where.
Right.
God, I think I have this woefully underrated. This
well,
match.
For people like me,
I had this at like 14 on a list of lists. That seems just way too low.
I
just hate the ending that much.
It's to me, it's no worse than between 5 and 10. I mean, absolutely no worse than. But for folks like myself that think that 17 might be the greatest card of all time, or even folks like yourself that think it's the second best as far as the WrestleManias, it's because of the strength top to bottom, not just the main event, but the other things here, too. Maybe not all the storylines made the most sense.
See, that's the thing. Like,
but
that's
the
why
matches.
Part of me, part of me, though, I...
Some storylines were good.
Some, sure. And in one of the more unusual matches, too,
yeah.
It was storyline carried. But I prefer the storylines of the undercard of WrestleMania 3. And you know who I am and the way I love great wrestling.
Right.
But I just thought that the wheels, we again began to see the modern WWE where storylines, that we don't do it that anymore. We're just going to kind of, we've got a big show.
Right.
Who cares what we've done the last 8 months? We're going to just put the biggest matches possible. And if it doesn't really make sense given the last 6 or 8 months, who gives a damn?
How ironic is it when we talk about starting to see the modern WWE product here? Because as we start to work our way down this outstanding card, the match that was on right before then is the first incarnation of 3 We're going to see the third one in a few weeks here at WrestleMania. Undertaker defeated Triple H.
A match that we don't want to pretend happen anymore, by the way.
Yeah. Although, I think Triple H, last year in his promo afterwards, for the first time acknowledged that we also fought 10 years ago. But it was not part of the pre-build last year, which I thought was stupid. Don't pretend it didn't happen.
I hate when they pretend things didn't happen.
No, no, it was so stupid. But it was a thing where I thought it was a very good match. It was a thing where they even teased that Triple H was going to, and they weren't making a big deal yet out of the streak, but it was a thing where they teased that Triple H was going
to
get the win over
him. He was
supposed to. Sledgehammer. Yeah, and then
did you know that he was supposed to win this match originally? This
really?
It's to show that, this again, the streak did not start becoming a draw till WrestleMania 20.
There's a couple near misses then of where the streak almost ended. That's amazing.
They were going to have him lose.
Okay.
But Triple H, and this is Urban Legend, I could be wrong.
Okay.
Okay, I don't know. All the participants who would matter, whose opinion would matter on this subject, would lie anyway,
okay.
So I guess we'll just have to have fun with it. That Triple H was punished for a pilled out of his mind Shawn Michaels showing up backstage and acting a fool.
Okay.
Because he had vowed. Shawn Michaels was supposed to come back and do something at this show.
That was the one in Cleveland, the Monday night of the joint Raw Nitro simulcast, the final Nitro. That was the one in Cleveland.
They reference it on a. There's a DVD.
Yes. Shawn Michaels says, I showed up in Cleveland that night and I was hammered out of my mind.
Yeah, and Triple H was kind of took the
fall.
So
that really was last minute because. And then Triple H said that Undertaker even kind of looked at him backstage like, what's going on with him?
Yeah, and. Here's the one thing, not to be a hipster with this match, and you're going to see it again this year. WrestleMania saw it again last year. I mean, they were fine. They put their money where their mouth is for the chair shot.
Yeah.
These guys were given a latitude in this match.
That's true.
That you just didn't see other guys get. They brawled. Remember, there was like the ref kept getting beat up.
Right.
They brawled outside forever. They were given the latitude, and there's nothing wrong with that. I would rather given the participants, I would rather them do that kind of match than a more traditional wrestling match.
But it didn't
match.
Have stips, so you're right. They got away with murder because the sledgehammer figured into the finish, and the match didn't even have stips to it. It was ostensibly a regular match.
If you give like a Jericho and a Benoit that kind of match, that's not going to be awesome. Okay?
Right.
This was like, I mean, they really were just like not. But that was fine. I mean, again, that match was like 3.5 stars.
It
Triple
was.
H Undertaker.
The 19-man gimmick battle royal in 505 won by the Iron Sheik because he was the one guy incapable of taking a bump over the top rope. He defeated Hillbilly Jim.
Again, last minute booking changes. Slaughter was supposed to win, and they realized the Iron Sheik couldn't go over the top rope. This was, you know, obviously they brought these old-timers back. This was kind of like the first wink-wink back to the old. Because it was funny that. For a couple of years there, and I'm going to really hammer this point home when we talk about WrestleMania 18, the older period was looked down on.
Right.
Like, that was the old ways. You know, we're done with that. This is the Attitude Era. We're erasing that. We got new crop of talent.
Right.
New mentalities. You know, that's dead. That's crappy. That's the other network. Okay.
That's a great point.
That's the other wrestling. This, they had bought WCW.
Yeah.
And they decide, and this is inoffensive. Okay,
well, Bobby Heenan was doing commentary for the match.
Yeah, and he calls Gene Oakland Tony, which is hilarious. And Gene Oakland gets on. But it was so funny that after years of sucking in WCW, Bobby Heenan was like so funny immediately. I mean, if you go back, him and Gene Oakland were just nailing these one-liners, like going to the ring, like the Repo Man comes out, and Gene Oakland, I remember, goes, hey, you know, this guy got my mother-in-law about a year and a half ago. And and Bobby Heenan's like, I think everyone got your mother-in-law about a year and a half ago.
Well, Heenan was probably sober, too, which made, you know.
He seems so happy to be back. Yeah. As a Bobby Heenan fan, I was glad for him.
Right.
But this is forgettable. This is wasteless.
Continuing to move back in a straight
line.
Speaking
of commentary, this is the only Paul Heyman commentated WrestleMania, which was
very
enjoyed by me over the useless Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, as he was on his cat-inspired vacation at the time. Edge and Christian in a rematch from the previous year. They again defeated the Dudley Boys, who again were champions, and the Hardy Boys, this time in a TLC match in 15:53 for the WWF Tag Team Championship.
This is a top 6 or 7. And this without the readjusted of me thinking that Austin Rock kind of got hosed by my ratings. But I put it slightly below TLC, the first one from SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't agree with that. A lot of people,
but above
think,
the triangle ladder match.
Oh, far above.
Year, yeah.
Both those two are far. Not. I mean, as far the try for frame of reference.
Yeah.
Here are the ratings. Triangle from WrestleMania 16, 4 stars.
Okay.
SummerSlam 2000, 5 stars.
Okay.
This match gets 4.75. Interesting. The stadium versus arena debate. These guys panicked big time after the match, thinking it wasn't good because they weren't getting the big reactions, because mm-hmm. this was in the Astrodome. They later went back and watched, wow, this match was really good, mm-hmm. and because you couldn't tell because the sound in the
right.
big arenas, it's not what it is like in the more intimate environments. I just think that this is one of those things that, yeah, there were some, certainly the most notable spot here was Edge spearing Jeff Hardy off the ladder,
right,
which was built upon. There were a few more spots here, but anytime you do a kind of match like this, and by the way, this is the definition of kind of the new WrestleMania, where these guys were all kind of doing other things and they just decided to do this rematch.
Bring them back together, yeah.
Yeah. And this was the first one where it wasn't really about climbing. The mentality of the ladder match changed.
Right.
We hear. It wasn't so much about just climbing up the ladder
right.
and getting the belt. These guys had set a standard that they had to make this a stunt show.
Right.
And I thought that in some ways kind of slightly hurt it. I'll give it, the 4.75, though.
It was amazing. You've got Shane McMahon, who defeated Vince McMahon in a street fight with Mick Foley as the special guest referee in 15-12. This was culminating a long-standing storyline between Shane and Vince. And then, of course, the week before we referenced it, that Raw in Cleveland, the one where Shane McMahon showed up in Panama City on the final Nitro and ended up taking over WCW. By the way, let me just mention this in passing. We mentioned about this being in the Astrodome, and this was a big deal. This shows you how beside the point it was for the previous 2 years. We didn't even touch on WrestleMania 2000, for what it's worth, was at the Anaheim Pond. WrestleMania 15 was in Philly at their arena here, too. So this was a return to stadium/dome settings
this was,
after a couple of years.
Despite all the success it had through the Attitude Era,
yeah.
This was the first big arena show. Big stadium.
Ironically,
show
that, on the tail end. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny when they.
Yeah.
With this Vince and Shane.
Yeah.
This is one of those things again. Had better than any right it had to be.
Right.
They tied a lot of storylines together.
Yeah.
You know, Linda McMahon, who I think is generally pretty worthless,
right.
in terms of the wrestling product. She did a good job getting out. I mean, it's real cheesy.
Right.
How she's sedated, supposedly. In the way she gets up, she kicks Vince in the nuts.
Trish didn't give her the meds she was supposed to.
But
yeah.
Everything worked. You know, Foley, did his thing. Everything really worked here, better than it had any. This is probably one of the better matches ever involving non-wrestlers.
And in something that foreshadowed all you needed to know about how RVD was going to be booked in the years to come, they let Shane McMahon use the Van Terminator with the trash can to win the match.
Well, they RVD wasn't available yet at this point, and that's something that I'll hit on probably in a future podcast. The treatment of RVD,
right?
But
and give credit to Shane for
hitting
it.
He did it. Yeah, he did it. I mean, again, he did it. That's fine. And this was better than it had any right to be. This was another three. This WrestleMania, I mean, it's pretty amazing. This has like 5 or 6 matches that hit 3.5 stars.
I don't think the next one was one of them. China defeated Ivory, the women's champion, in 2:39 to regain the title.
I don't even want to speak my opinions on China during this period.
Okay.
I mean, just beyond, I actually was actively rooting for her to be fired.
And she did
get 86.
I always appreciated Ivory, even going back to the Glow days here, but yeah, she was not well used in this match.
The Right to Censor was a group that deserved better.
Certainly. The next one, and this was friggin' awesome. The first of the times we would see on pay-per-view, I think it was the first of the times in a singles match, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, 14:02. And early on in the match, I remember they were doing a thing with the amateur takedowns and everything like that, which the party that I was watching it at with the guys here, it was like, this is cool and this is different. This is just, it was part of the whole mood of the day and why I think this is the greatest WrestleMania. That moment there, everything Ben Wyver did is tainted by what came later. But I mean, I always remember that. It's like, wow, they're breaking this out for WrestleMania, this sequence. It just seemed so emblematic of this day, Kyle Ross.
Yeah, it's funny, though, in retrospect, that these guys have definitely had much better matches since that period. The Royal Rumble 2003 match is obviously their best. They had better matches, I think, later that year. And, you know, in 2002, they had better matches. This was weird that they had kind of turned Benoit as a babyface for this. And he got, you know, the ending was kind of weak on this match. I thought they did it with a roll up where he hooked the tights. But other than that, I mean, this is a 4.25 star match. It's one of three matches at this WrestleMania that hits 4 stars or above, which is certainly something worth crowing home about. I mean, by that point, there had been no WrestleMania that had 3 matches at 4 stars or higher.
Yeah.
4.25 or higher, no less. So this is the definition of 4.25. So, I mean, with 2 4.75 star matches and a 4.25 star match, you know, yeah, the wrestling here is unparalleled in WrestleMania history.
Right, and we've hit all of the high spots of the card, but there were maybe a few moments left in the remaining matches. The next one, Eddie Guerrero with Perry Saturn defeated Test for the year, who was the champion for the European Championship at 10:30.
I think Eddie got fired or sent to rehab shortly after this.
Yeah.
The right guy goes over.
Well, here's how I look at it. Yeah, Test was involved, but anything that Eddie's involved with can only suck so much. There's a floor on how bad Eddie Guerrero match
can be. This
was
not a bad match. I mean, it's not one of Eddie's best, but it's probably one of Test's.
That's exactly what you would expect, I guess, when you put these two guys
in there.
By the
way, it's sad that that both these guys are no longer with us.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Yeah, and how ironic is it, too? Wasn't it Eddie Guerrero's death that prompted Test to go on the rant about how they don't take wellness seriously, which was the springboard to Test getting rehired for the last time? Test was ranting about somebody's death, and I think it was Eddie's.
I think it was.
Sadly ironic. Didn't realize it until I saw it here. At 9:18, triple threat hardcore match for the WWF Hardcore Championship. The champion Raven lost to Kane. The Big Show was also in the match.
This was enjoyable. If only for the fact that I like Raven, and this was the only legitimate push he got in WWE.
So watered down there, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, he was old and broken down.
Right.
This was a very gimmicked match. I mean, they were battling all around. You know, I think there was golf carts involved, but it was fun. I mean, do you want to see you don't want to see Big Show and Kane doing a Benoit Engel impression, for Christ's sake.
Exactly. You talked about RTC previously. Taz and the APA, Bradshaw and Farouk with Jacqueline, defeated Right to Censor, Godfather Val Venus, and Bull Buchanan with Steven Richards in a 6-man match at only 4:53.
Yeah, this was the end of the RTC.
Yeah.
I always thought if you were looking for someone for Austin to feud with in the fall, if you were going to turn Austin heel at that point, it would have been the RTC with McMahon, but they didn't buy into Steven Richards as a legitimate top flight heel.
No, they
didn't.
And
he could have been for a little bit.
Could have been. By the way, and this was one of the first times this was ever noticeable to me, Bradshaw very much over in Texas in this match.
He cut a great promo beforhand, if I remember. Talking about the history of Texas wrestling.
Yeah. The opener on the card, Chris Jericho, Intercontinental Champion. I believe he was the only champion to successfully defend during the card. He defended against William Regal at 8:08 for the Intercontinental Championship.
Again, and this was pretty much the case of with Jericho in the early part of in his initial run in the company, always felt like he should have been in a higher spot on the card.
Yeah, and this was like an insta feud, wasn't it?
He like peed in Regal's claw. Regal was the commissioner, and Regal was over. I mean, don't get me wrong; these are two top flight guys, but it just felt like this should have been more than the opening match.
Should have been more, but I remember it for
it's
a relatively short match. It was pretty
good. Pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
And you go back to Heat on this too. What opened it on TV? X-Factor, Justin Credible, and X-Pac with Albert defeated Steve Blackman and Grandmaster Sexay at 7:46. That sounds random.
It's two of my least favorite teams ever.
Yeah, I can understand why. So that was the setup of 17 and how it was executed. We go into the final one that we're talking about here today, 18. A lot of people argue, and one of our more devoted listeners made the point in previous comments here on our YouTube channel, Bedford Crenshaw, about that 17 was maybe the real end of Attitude. 18, I think, was the real bookmark. This was the final death knell of the end. And more importantly, Kyle, for the purposes of you defining this, I think the biggest thing of all, this was the one right before the brand split.
That is why it got lumped in. It was because to the point that, yeah, the Austin heel turn really is what kind of killed the era, they say.
Yeah.
But it was weird. This WrestleMania was kind of in limbo for me. I didn't know whether to include it in the next one or this one. And the deciding point was what you just brought up, that it was the last one before the brand split, which I will rant on in great detail in the next podcast on my hatred of it. But this was the last one, and it was obviously this was the last bad wrestle. I hate this WrestleMania.
But here's the thing, though.
I'd just like to get that out of the way. To me, breaking up into the groups of five.
Yeah.
If 3 and 17 stand alone, and then you do five groups of five.
Yeah.
This is probably the last one of the bottom 10.
And you know what? And here's the thing. It's inexcusable.
I actually hate. Yeah. Given the talent they had at this time compared to like what they had at the WrestleMania 4s and 5s.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me as a card, at least in terms of the possibilities of, I always look at, ironically, 10 years before, Royal Rumble 92. That match, the 30 guys in that match, the past, present, and future of wrestling that was there, this card.
If you remember, they had that Royal Rumble.
It was amazing.
The Royal Rumble that they did, which is a good place to start. Yeah. Because, well, first of all, actually, we need to start with here.
Yeah, the invasion.
Started and ended in between the two WrestleManias and was a colossal disaster. We don't have time in this.
Worst drop ball in the history of pro wrestling. Yeah, so this was the aftermath. This was the how do we regroup period.
Okay, so the big thing was, there are two big things. You talk about the Royal Rumble. That was a great Royal Rumble, by the way, which had a lot of over people in there. WCW, and what had helped is the influx of the WCW talent, which had not been complete. Well, had mostly been buried.
Vince was starting to go after more guys than he had during the invasion, aka the NWO.
Yeah, but Triple H wins. It was funny because this was another interesting thing. You talk about not tying up loose ends.
Yep.
Triple H gets injured in a wonderful match. I believe the best match in the history of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
He and Austin, the heel, against Benoit and Jericho.
Right.
He's then out. He misses the entire invasion angle. He comes back and is simply cheered just because he hasn't been on. He's a star and hasn't been on TV in 8 months.
Right. Classic comeback, Pop.
Yeah, it was so big. I was always kind of like, wait, he's a face now? I remember thinking that at the time. And he goes in to challenge Jericho, who. It was kind of interesting that they picked when they did for Jericho, because I thought Jericho, his work had kind of slipped a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he'd been frustrated by the politics for so long, but he was really sagging as a baby face. And I thought they waited too long to turn him heel and do it. They did the thing. They did put him over well. They had him beat Rock and Austin the same night. They always talk about the first undisputed champion.
Right.
You know, unifying the WWF and WCW titles.
Stanislaus Zbyszko says hi. The look you're giving me right now is just priceless.
But it felt like it should have been more. Jericho's title reign felt like it should have been so much more. And, you know, The Rock did a great job of putting him over, but there was like this feeling of inevitability with the Triple H Jericho match that you knew who was going to win. The involvement of Stephanie McMahon with Jericho, while it's kind of funny that they wouldn't do it with Angle.
Right.
But they did it with Jericho here, and it did not work at all. You know, plus Jericho kind of like taking orders from her was an awful idea anyway.
Yeah.
But this was...
He was her sidekick. It was an awful storyline.
It was really bad with the dog and stuff like that. It wasn't like cleaning up her poo. That was hideous.
And here's one of the funny things, too. I've always... And this is the period of time before Triple H turned face in 2006 with DX. But that period of time leading up to that, when people kept asking about when are you going to turn face... He would always say, with classic faux modesty, I'm just not a good baby face. Look at what happened the last time. The thing is, Triple H was a pretty doggone good baby face the first couple of weeks until the booking killed him.
Yeah.
He was a victim. But he's not going to say that because guess who's the head booker? Yeah, his old lady.
It was okay. Like, remember, he was going to renew his vows with Stephanie, and he
got away from being Triple H. That's what I always say about guys when they turn face. Keep the things that got you over as a heel.
Yeah,
keep
characteristics. Yeah, don't turn Diesel into smiling Diesel. Yeah. We don't want smiling Brock.
He was smiling Triple H. That's why he sucked. Because of the booking.
And the inevitability. It's funny that they went back two. It's funny here, okay? Mm-hmm. 2 years a heel.
Yeah.
Well, now, Austin turns heel in the process, but Triple H was a heel 2 years prior, as we talked about.
Right.
That we go back to a babyface chasing the championship and winning it with Triple H.
Right.
And it was so inevitable. It was like, it was kind of almost like Hogan's slaughter inevitable, where it's like even, you know, the rubiest of rubes in row Triple Z knew who was winning. And what compounded this as we move to what is really what is remembered about this show was that this is one of two main event title matches in WrestleMania history that was really overshadowed by something on the undercard. Ironically, both title matches involve Triple H. We'll get to one in a future podcast when he wrestles Randy Orton in WrestleMania 25, where the world title match should not have gone on last.
Right.
And this is where I am going to go all Smart Mark and Kyle Ross on you as we talk about The Rock versus Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
I hate this match. I am in the minority. It was a great moment, but the match itself is fine. I kind of think it's embarrassing how The Rock had to tone it down so an aging Hogan could keep up. But this is something this is a criticism I never hand out ever. I blame the crowd. Toronto. I don't know what it was. Maybe
real
the novelty 50-50
crowd, folks.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was the crowd was all about Hogan.
Bizarro world.
And I don't know if it was the novelty of seeing him wrestle in the WWF for the first time, but I remember, and I joked about you off air that it was kind of like, in terms of being maybe like just not being just completely unobjective.
Yeah.
You know, I remember you always joke with me when it was very clear that Do You Smell What Barack Is Cooking was going to win in 2008.
Yes.
That, you know, you were just beside. I remember just being so mad during this match and being like, no, what are you people doing? Like,
right.
Because I knew where it was going to lead.
Right.
And it did
nowhere
lead there
good.
With Hogan. And here's the thing. 2 months later, no one gave a damn about Hogan. But it didn't stop them from putting the belt on him in a meaningless run. Hulk Hogan had never wrestled another match after this, that would have been fine.
Sure.
To me, it was just for The Rock, who was, and I didn't mean to cut you off. Right. The Rock was a linchpin of the Attitude Era. And this is why I include this in the birth and death. The Austin heel turn was obviously a big part of the death, the biggest part of the death of the Attitude Era. This, to me, was kind of the icing on the cake, though. Here's a linchpin of the good guy promotion. The promotion that won. Okay?
Right.
To me, one of the reasons that I got caught up in it, too, even though I'm a wrestling historian, I've always, like, you know, I don't, you know, looking back, I prefer both Boom. I like both Boom ears somewhat equal. I prefer the Attitude one slightly more just because, you know, it was kind of when I was a teen. You know, it kind of felt like, you know, how I prefer 90s rock music to the 60s overall because I was a part of it.
Right.
You know, I was a bigger part. I felt like I was there when it was bad.
Right.
You know, and then things got good. You know, I saw, you know, like a, you know, you see like a Nirvana and Pearl Jam come from the ashes and rise up. You know, this.
Exactly, exactly. Like, you were there when Right Said Fred broke through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so The Rock, if I was The Rock, I would have been, as a person, I would have been pissed. And I thought he had a right, like, it's like, really? I mean, the crowd can cheer for who they want to cheer for. But Hogan was on the losing side, man. And he makes it seem like he wasn't, because he's a jackass.
Right.
Okay? Because he's a complete jackass. This is when my hatred of Hogan's going to come out, okay? All right, he was the main guy of the promotion that went out of business. I don't care if he was on again, off again for the last 2 years, okay?
Right.
He was their biggest star, and the company went out of business. He came back, and look, again, he went back to maybe his audience, I guess, it was not the audience of Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, the Road Warriors, Magnum TA, the Horsemen. But I just was stunned. I remember that Michael Hayes tells a story that he went to Stephanie. He's like, I think Hogan's going to get the cheers here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've done a lot to make him a heel. They've done the, you know, they cut that wonderful promo. Then they do that hideous thing where they try to run him over with a truck, which was completely
unnecessary. Hogan was supposed to be a mega heel.
Yes. And it was the first time, I think, where the crowd says, we don't care what you're telling us. We're going to cheer for who you want. And 99 times out of 100, I will support the crowd. I just think that them cheering for Hogan set the company back. And the company, for many years before this, even if they had stagnated somewhat during periods,
yeah,
had always been about what's new. And for the first time, and granted, it was probably because WCW was longer, but they went back to what's old.
Yeah.
And look, Hogan didn't win. The Rock was leaving. I understand these things. But I just, it was, part of me was like, oh no, I know where this is going to lead. And in a month and a half, when y'all are sick of Hulk Hogan and you're not watching anymore, I hope you remember who's responsible for this, because it wasn't me.
Well, and I know it's one of these things where, I know sometimes you think I'm a little pedantic on the kayfabe things and on the storylines. Maybe I'm Nelson nitpicker from time to time, whatever the case may be. But I do have a problem with the storyline being so utterly disconnected from the match. Hulk Hogan friggin' ran over Rock and tried to kill him, and they're out there. It's like it never happened.
Yeah,
big problem with the storyline being disconnected from the match. It cannot
now,
be.
Now, in this regard, it was not their fault, but it shows, though.
That's the crowd's fault. I agree.
Well, not necessarily. I'll show you. It's. I guess it's what came first, the chicken or the egg. The issue was that the storylines were no longer believable.
Well, that was way too over the top, yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's the fact that they just read the crowd wrong, if Toronto was just an outlier crowd, but we talked about WrestleMania 17. They had gotten away from the old school WrestleMania of, let's shoot an angle.
Right.
Let's build the heat. Let's have them have a match. Starting with WrestleMania 17, it's like, okay, we just need the biggest show possible. To hell with what we've done the last 6 months. Let's just put the best possible card together, even if it makes no sense.
Right. And by the way, Austin vetoed a match with Hogan. It should have been Austin Hogan. Austin vetoed it. At least according to a copy of the Torch that I have.
Probably they should have done it here, given that they never did it at all.
It was supposed to be here.
Now,
it was supposed to be in lieu of this match.
I
guarantee you, by the way, the crowd would not have baby-faced Hollywood Hulk Hogan against Steve Austin.
That's an interesting point. The other thing is,
The Rock was vulnerable to it.
This show also should have been all about WWF versus WCW. I thought that, you know,
right.
To me, this would have been a great spot for. And look, we don't have time.
Yeah, but they'd murdered everything with the invasion, though. That's the problem.
Well, here's the thing. Let's say they don't do that, okay?
Sure.
Let's say they play their cards right. Let's say they're a little more patient. Let's say that they're willing to bring the people in from to buy these guys out, okay?
Everything that Vince is not, unless he's completely desperate and has his back against the wall.
Yes. Let's say they did the invasion right.
Yeah.
This should have been the big WWE, like, an all-baby-face WWF side against an all-heel WCW side.
Sure.
I remember when the invasion first, you know, when the storyline first started, it's like, okay, WrestleMania 18 is going to be some huge inter-promotional dream match main eventing. And it wasn't. I mean,
right.
I guess Rock and Hogan, you know, was to a degree, but it had no, it was just two big stars.
Right.
It was not WWF versus WCW, which I guess is the problem, which is, I guess, the disconnect I have with the rest of the audience. I viewed it, Rock versus Hogan, as a total moratorium on WWF versus WCW. Maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm but I just hit on this. Maybe we're the morons, because maybe we're the only two who see it that way, because it's very obvious the crowd in Toronto didn't. That's why I had a problem with it. To me, Rock Hogan was like the last bit of the invasion where it was WWF versus WCW, and I just did not understand for the life of me why the crowd went for the WCW guy.
Yeah,
I still viewed Hogan as a WCW guy, and maybe WWF crowd just never viewed Hogan as a WCW guy.
But here's the thing. The Rock had deep roots in that city. His father, Rocky Johnson, lived there for a while.
True, but I mean, you're talking to a majority audience that doesn't know that or doesn't care.
Well, I've always believed in the conspiracy theory. My conspiracy theory on this is Hulk Hogan knew 12 years before at WrestleMania 6 he would be returning to wrestle there in a dome match someday. That's why he babyfaced himself after losing to the Warrior.
For God.
Like that. That's my conspiracy
theory. By the way, here's a hipster opinion that most people share. I actually prefer the Trump Plaza WrestleManias to the Skydome WrestleManias.
That's right. You said that in the production notes. That's right.
People do not have that opinion. I would rate this as one of the 7 or 8 worst WrestleManias.
Going down this, it's inex-freaking-cusable because particularly with losing my voice here. There was so much talent on this show.
It was just like I could go down, and again, I feel like I've been negative Nancy in this podcast, but to me it's just like they could have gone and maybe it was just coinciding with a period where I thought I knew it all, I thought I was so smart, but it just seemed like almost everyone on this show, save for Rock and Hogan, could have been used better.
Well, here's the thing, though. If we're so dumb and they're so smart, how come they went in a turlet in the time after this show?
This will really get you going. What I'm about to do here. See, that's why I feel I can be critical about the WWF, because their numbers bear out what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And why I'm not critical of the other company in Connecticut, the Worldwide Leader, because their ratings keep going up. Thank you very much.
Oh, that does get my goat. No question about it.
Thank you very much.
If you're putting over Skip Bayless TV, that does get my goat. Definitely. We talked about the two matches on the show here that are the most memorable for it. The Rock, by the way. You know what's even more shameless than what you just did? The Rock saying on Twitter recently that his match with Hollywood Hulk Hogan on this card was the biggest one of all time. He said I'm thinking to myself, geez, Dwayne, wouldn't you have at least closed the show if it was the biggest match of all time?
I think he has a point. I think it's on the short list.
Really?
As far as famous matches go, it's not
bigger than Hogan Andre. I know that's your bugaboo, but it's not bigger than Hogan Andre.
I don't have. I said it was the most famous match. What do you want for me to say? Do you want me to go? What do you and Paul Belfry want me to do? Build a hot tub time machine, go back to 1987, climb in the ring and blow both men in the ring and say, I am in awe of both of your presence.
I am insulted because in all of our years of association with a man, that is the first time anyone has ever lumped my wrestling taste in with Paul Belfry.
You're on his Survivor Series team there, buddy.
I lean more towards his opinion of WrestleMania 3, but gee whiz.
You're on the 4x4s. I'm on the King's Court. Okay. Let me tell you something, all right? What do you want me to do?
That's hidden below the belt to put me on Team Boat Shoes, man. Okay. That's way hidden below
the
belt.
What do you want me to do? It is the most famous match in wrestling history. What else can I say? I mean, would you like me?
Hogan Warrior's bigger than this one, ironically, in the same building.
Do you think so?
I do, because, again, and it's weird because there's a gap in age between us, but we're both in some ways children of the 80s. And it's like to children of the 80s, Hogan Warrior's got that nostalgia factor that even Hogan Rock. Hogan was cheered in 2002 because of nostalgia. Hogan Warrior was the nostalgia. That's my thing.
It's close. I can see what you're saying. It's one of those things where, depending on what side of the bed I wake up that day,
how about
I
Hogan
could see
Savage?
A poker.
It's not bigger than Hogan Savage. Hogan Rock was not bigger than Hogan Savage. No way.
Do you want me to start like listing matches that were better than like? I don't know from the WrestleMania era.
Yeah.
In terms of famous WrestleMania matches, let's take out match quality.
Yeah. Because
like a Hart Austin would be down the list.
The main event of WrestleMania 1 was bigger than Hogan Rock.
Yeah, it probably was.
It was. I mean, I'm just saying Dwayne was being very shameless there. But that's
here's the thing. Maybe this is what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
Has there been a more famous match since this one at WrestleMania?
No, I don't think there has been.
Neither do I.
By the way, too. And we talked about it before, but the main
Rock
event,
Cena could. It'll be interesting to see how. I don't think will be as big.
No,
Cena's not as big a star as Hogan.
No, he's not. Last note on the main event, which we already talked about: Triple H beating Jericho for the Undisputed Championship in 1841. Everybody always says the crowd was too subdued because of having to follow Hogan Rock, and I get that. Is there any, do you give any credence to the notion, and this is a notion that's completely mine, so if it's out of left field, the fault is all mine. Jericho being Canadian, it's hard to get Canadians booed in Canada, even when they're heels. I'm not going to say split crowd, but was the crowd subdued because as over as Triple H was, even with the way that
I thought he cooled down.
He had cooled down, okay. But in addition to him being cooled down, was it a thing of trying to get people to boo Jericho and Toronto just being too hard? Was there a little bit of that, at least?
Toronto isn't as necessarily Canadian as, like, Calgary was. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's the most American, but
Brett always referred to Canada, to Toronto as a city like that, that it would be hard to get for him to get booed in.
Yeah, well, Brett's he's a bigger national star than Jericho.
Okay.
But
I thought you were going to say egotist. Okay.
Oh, well, that too.
All right.
But
that's why I left. I thought you were going
It's not the predominant factor.
Yeah.
But it's on the list.
It's part of the rich melange.
It is on the list of reasons why that match did not work as the main event.
Okay. All right. The other one's on the card here. Completely forgettable one here. Jazz, the women's champion, defeated Trish Stratus and Lita in 6:16 in a triple threat
match.
This
is when Trish was getting good.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
Jazz underrated.
She was.
Not
she
someone
was.
Who's remembered well.
I just read a revisionist piece on her recently that portrayed her as one of the greatest women's champions of all time, and it was fairly persuasive. It was fairly persuasive.
That far.
Well, you know. I mean, how many great, particularly in the last, 20 years, how many great women's champions have there been? So.
Yeah, it's like music. Give me a nice rack over some voice, At the end of the day, okay.
Nice.
It's like I always tell people, these female indie rock singers, it's like, hey, at least Britney Spears got a nice set of tits while I'm ignoring her music.
You know what's great? I'm actually going to be able to limp to the finish here in better fashion. You made me laugh so hard it loosened some of the phlegm in my throat, so thank you for that.
Not a problem, sir.
The tag team champions, Billy and Chuck,
oh boy,
early on in their homoerotic phase here, defeated the APA, the Dudley Boys with Stacy Keibler, and the Hardy Boys in a Four Corners elimination match for the tag team championship in 1350.
Wait, Billy and Chuck won?
They won.
Well, then Rick Santorum was not booking very clearly. I don't remember anything about that.
I understand Billy and Chuck were the guys that took the shirtless photograph of Rick Santorum last week on the Puerto Rican cruise.
Excuse me. God bless the fact Billy Gunn has every right to rip that angle to shreds, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
I mean, I think he slightly overstates how much they got it over, but it was at least somewhat over.
It God was. Bless Rico.
Yeah, it
Whatever
was.
Whatever happened to Rico? He got underutilized.
Well, they had him beat Ric Flair clean on TV not long thereafter, which was completely unforgivable.
I just liked how Jim Ross said a former American gladiator. That's all I waited for. That was like one of the things. I just waited. It was like the old WCW when you wait for him to bust out Ron Simmons' Florida State statistics. It's like, okay, I'm not interested anymore.
If only years later he would have put over Mike Adamly so strong.
Yes, really.
This was hard to believe that this was an upper mid-card match, but Stone Cold Steve Austin defeated Scott Hall with Kevin Nash at 9:51. Hall and Nash would later on, by the way, in the aftermath of the Hogan match, come out, attack him, turn him full-fledged babyface. But anyways, in this match here, what's interesting is from reading a torch that I had at the time that it was not supposed to necessarily be a clean win for Austin over Hall. Austin pulled rank, and this was the beginning of his political problems with them. He demanded it because apparently Hall was drinking in the hotel, the lobby, the night before. And
which is self-serving for Steve Austin to call someone out for
people.
Drinking.
Jeez, yeah.
But, yeah, you're right. He was gone from the promotion.
What's next? He's going to get on somebody for wife beating?
Did
I just say that?
They know. Yes. Maybe he can team up with Chris Brown to feed a CM Punk. But
that's a natural tie-in, yes. By the way, for an Austin Punk feud.
Yes, there it is. Yes. I like it. But will never happen. This was like Austin. Here's the problem with the Austin heel turn. When he goes back to being a babyface, they didn't do it. He just kind of did it because
they just acted like the last 6 months never happened.
And it was,
don't do that.
It was bad. It was watered down. And it was sad. No one cared about Austin. No one cared about this match. And it was so bad that, like, granted, Scott Hall was just abysmal by this period. I mean, he had the years of no one was harmed more by going from one company to the other,
right?
From a professionalism standpoint, than Scott Hall. His deterioration in WCW was frightening. Kevin Nash was never a good worker.
Right.
Now, he had no good, he correspondingly had no good matches in WCW, but Scott Hall used to be capable of having a good match, and when he came back to tie, he had nothing.
You never would have believed once upon a time Steve Austin versus one of the cornerstone NWO members would have meant so little.
Yes, and that's what makes this so disappointing.
Yeah, it symbolizes, it is probably the mascot for the entire card when you talk about disappointment and the level there. Next match here, two guys that would really go on to do great stuff in the years to come. Edge defeated Booker T in 6:32 in a stupid, what was this, a feud over like a hair commercial,
yeah,
or something, right?
Yeah, shampoo commercial. This was, jeez. I remember there was a sign in the crowd, they were feuding over shampoo.
Yeah.
Again, it's pretty good, but
yep.
It had that feeling that that you saw at maybe WrestleMania 17 with a Jericho and a Regal.
Right.
And that you'd certainly see in future WrestleManias with other guys where,
right.
God, these guys, they should be positioned a little more stronger, a little more serious.
Right. One of the few Undertaker heel matches during the, once you get past, actually in the entire history of the streak, because he became a face relatively early on.
Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
The very first one.
Yeah, and there was that, and then we talked about Boss Man before, which was at 15, which was heel versus heel. Here was heel versus face. He defeated Ric Flair. Essentially, this was part of the ongoing Ric Flair Vince McMahon storyline. The Undertaker was basically Vince McMahon's henchman. They ended up having a no disqualification match. Undertaker wins in 1847.
This is the best match on the card, by the way.
It was.
From a wrestling perspective.
It was. Awesome, legendary run-in by Arn Anderson delivering the spine buster to the Undertaker. One of my favorite WrestleMania moments ever. A great match.
Arn, by the way, comes out. Not only does he do that, which is great, blades.
Right.
You talk, I love a man who's going to come out for 2 minutes and blade.
Right.
That's earning your paycheck, Double A.
Yeah, exactly. And he didn't do it right on camera like Corporal Kirchner did at WrestleMania, too.
Thank you. I'll say this. They were burying Ric Flair badly during this period.
Yeah, they were. They were. Yeah,
he came in with such great fanfare. He beats Vince at the Royal Rumble, which was great. And then, like, if you remember the build of this,
yeah.
Again, classical wrestling sense, Ricky, that you and I are so big a part of. Like, The Undertaker basically beat Flair's ass at every turn.
All the heat was on him, yeah.
You know, remember he beat up his son, he beat up his friend, he called him old and pathetic, and then he beat him.
Right. The only part of it was that I think Flair...
You talk about a meaningless heel turn?
Right.
The Undertaker's heel turn. Like, no one booed him the entire time.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? No one booed him. The only good part of the Undertaker heel turn was the dropkick of Doom with Maven at the Royal Rumble. Great moment.
People weren't even booing him during the initial segment when he shoved Jim Ross's face in Vince's ass. People weren't even booing him for that. And that shows you how bulletproof he was. The other half of the Brothers of Destruction, Kane, was defeated by Kurt Angle at 10:45 in a match, as best as I can recall, with no discernible storyline.
It was something. All I remember is that they had a better match on SmackDown like 2 weeks before.
Which is unforgivable. You're talking about WrestleMania. You got to have the best one here.
Yeah, that's something they would never do now. Yeah, I don't know.
In the waning days of the Hardcore Championship at 3:15, Maven, the Hardcore Freudian slip, they didn't bring him back. Maven, the Hardcore Champion, fought Goldust to a no contest. Excuse me, how do you do a no contest in a Hardcore match?
I don't. Did they do like some gimmick? I can't remember this.
I can't.
All I
either.
Remember is feeling very sad. Maven, the crowd wanted to cheer him, but he wasn't ready.
Right.
I think there was. You know what they did? This just went into like one of those gags where the storyline kept going throughout the match, and the title kept changing hands backstage.
That's right. That's right. It was. Yeah.
I'm almost positive because there was a great moment involving Christian. I think he knocked out Molly Holly from behind, and like you didn't see who it was.
Right.
And, like, a disgusted Jim Ross just did one of his classic. I can't remember. It's something you got to look at. If you could find Christian winning, you know, Jim Ross was vintage here.
I guess at the end of all of that, Hurricane pinned Spike backstage to become the champion at the very end, which is why I hated the Hardcore title and the 24/7 rules.
Nothing, it was all right for a while.
I hate it. It exposed the business. I mean, again, maybe that's me being Nelson nitpicker, but, yeah, that's just something I didn't like about it as a purist. For the European Championship in 608, Diamond Dallas Page, the champion, defeated Christian.
Jesus, you think for all the people who think Christian gets a raw deal recently.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, jobbing to DDP?
Yeah.
How low do you have to be on the totem pole? This is when they were doing a loser gimmick streak.
Yeah, DDP was doing the motivational speaker thing, which I got to say was one of the best uses of him ever. Doing the cheesy self-parody, that was gold, Jerry.
I remember
that
I was kind of mad, though, because they had missed the boat on him so bad. He was a guy who could actually work and tried and really wanted to be a part of the invasion, and they pooped on him so badly.
By the way, and I just read this recently, I don't remember where, but DDP, and the reason he screwed up his back so badly at about this point and had to leave, that supposedly when he came in, remember all the political stuff the previous year with the invasion? Well, Undertaker and some of the other locker room leaders were saying, we don't like that these guys don't take flat back bumps, because a lot of these guys like bump to the side or whatever. So DDP starts doing flat back bumps, and boom, his vertebrae are gone.
Yeah, I mean, his career.
I can't vouch for that.
Yeah, his career and dignity were gone long before this. I admit, it was witty, him doing the motivational, but man, again, when I look at these two guys, capable of so much more, particularly Christian.
They were. The opener on the card, RVD defeated the Intercontinental Champion, William Regal, in 6:19.
This was his first singles championship, RVD.
Yes.
Again, I was already very irritated at the use of Rob Van Dam at this point.
Right.
He was so hot when he came in. He was so hot that they basically had no choice but to insert him into the world title match at that No Mercy in October. They didn't want to do it.
Right.
And they immediately tried their damnedest to shut him down the card. At least he won the Intercontinental title. He was a fine Intercontinental champion. He had a feud with Eddie Guerrero that kept me going through some real dog raws in 2002.
Right.
Regal, you know, curtain jerking, losing in the curtain jerker 2 years in a row, seems okay. RVD, I just thought RVD should have been used in a higher profile match.
How ironic in this match. They could have worked this into the storyline. A man on the cover at one point of High Times magazine versus another man who, under the influence of drugs, once urinated all over the inside of an airplane.
Well, that hadn't happened yet, I don't believe.
Are you sure?
Positive.
This was 02. Really?
It was
Regal hit bottom after 02. I thought this was like 98, 99.
Oh, I thought the flight from hell was when he peed on the...
No. He was way before.
Okay, I apologize. The flight from hell was right after
summer of 02.
Oh, yeah. It was actually the next tour.
Oh, it might have been.
Scott Hall was on the plane.
One of the guys who was on that also. That's right. So it couldn't have been too long afterwards. Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, one of the guys on that. He was in the sixth man on Sunday Night Heat. Rikishi, Scotty Tuhati, and Albert defeated Mr. Perfect, Lance Storm, and Test. I even look at this match as you could have done more with some of these guys in the match.
Especially Lance Storm.
Yeah.
Who got a bit, they tried a little bit with him.
Bum deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Test is Test. Perfect.
Perfect. Even at that point, there was some juice left in the rind.
He came in and got a lot of heat in that Royal Rumble. You feel that maybe it would have been nice to see, versus RVD?
You know,
that would have been kind of cool, RVD versus Mr. Perfect.
Granted, you know, Perfect was at this point in time, sadly, I think less than a year away from perishing face down in a plate full of flour, but by the same token, not to sound crass, but he was putting out pretty good matches until up near the end.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, so, you know, that's how that went. So WrestleMania 18, a complete underachievement in all ways in terms of everything that they had available at their disposal. And again, we have covered from 14 through 18 here.
It took us a while to get there, I think.
Our longest one yet, and by far, the birth of a boom to the death of a boom in these five pay-per-views here. So, anything more to be said on these?
I don't think there's anything more that can be said.
I don't know
if I'm capable of speaking anymore.
Yeah.
I'll go watch the OU basketball game.
I'm just amazed you're not sounding like me at this point in time here.
Yeah.
And I sounded like this at the outset. So here we go. All right, WrestleMania is 14 through 18. Thank you very much, Kyle Ross. We have two parts yet to go, but this has been part 7 of the Kyle Ross 9-part history of WrestleMania Ultimate Anthology.